When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Mozzie here. I don't have much experience when it comes to rallying, but Waukesha Racing Services does. And they're available now for your rally needs. They can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication. No job is too big or too small. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. And you don't need to be an Aussie champion or factory back to be able to. From club to state to national level competitors and car owners, let Waukesha Racing Services help you with your rally needs. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services at waukeshawracing.com.au.
It's Wednesday, the 24th of April. Peter Whitten, welcome to Rally Sport Magazine's Special Stage Podcast.
G'day, Luke. I hope you're going well, but isn't the rally season really underway now?
We say it every week, but I enjoy talking about it because there's rallies coming thick and fast. We'll be at one this weekend. There was a state round last weekend, and it all follows on from the Rally of Canberra and the Otago Rally in New Zealand that opened the National Championship rallies. Now, this podcast is one of two Rally Sport Magazine podcasts. If you haven't listened to our Dust Trails podcast already, please do so. It's in a different spot to where you'll find this one. Search Dust Trails wherever you get your podcasts for some longer in-depth chats with some of the sport's greats. For now, though, Peter, we'll focus, like we do always on this podcast, on what's happening in the here and now. Croatia Rally, the fourth round of the WRC, ran at the weekend, won by Sebastian Ogier. Do you like the Croatia Rally and what it provides the WRC?
It's the first tarmac rally of the year, obviously, apart from Monte Carlo, which is usually with snow and ice. But, the first generally dry tarmac event, and there was rain predicted this year and that didn't eventuate, unfortunately, I guess, because having watched quite a lot of the first couple of days, certainly the first group of stages on those first 2 days, I found it quite mundane and boring to watch. I mean, it didn't provide the excitement certainly that we as gravel rally enthusiasts like, but it certainly turned around on the last day.
Yeah, it's always a tricky event, Croatia. It's only been in the championship for a few years now, but every single season it seems to throw up a whole range of different things, whether it be on the first day or the last day. When you expect rain like that in a rally as well, it's difficult because you get your expectations up in terms of, well, it's going to be quite interesting right from the get-go when there's rain forecast. We sort of had that scenario in Kenya when we were thinking about the rain that might have come. The snorkels might have been used in Kenya, and we were thinking about the rain that was going to come for Croatia as well. Like you say, though, it didn't happen. The wind was turned on its head, though, on the last day. Thierry Neuville had the rally lead all through the event, but it was taken away from him. And the man who was always in second, Elfyn Evans, also couldn't get the win. Tell me a bit about how that panned out, Peter, across that last day.
It was quite an amazing event, really. I mean, there were eight Rally 1 hybrid cars in the field, and up until the last day, they were all still running and pretty much without problems, I guess. I mean, there's nobody that had dropped back with major issues. And I guess in the end, that turned out to be the case as well. All eight cars finished. But as you alluded to, Luke, it really did turn on its head on the last day. And first it was Elfyn Evans who had a spin, lost 15, 20 seconds, I think, and by the time he got to the end of the stage, he was quite disappointed, obviously. But unbeknownst to him at the time, Thierry Neuville had an even more major incident where he'd gone off the road and into some trees. And the damage was more cosmetic for sure than I guess mechanical. But he did lose the hybrid system there after that. And the main issue for Thierry was the fact that the rear wing was snapped off. That really cost him any chance of not only challenging for victory on the last stage, but certainly of challenging for power stage points as well. And that our mate Sebastian Ogier, he had quite a bit of good fortune himself, and he managed to pull out another victory.
Yeah, his 100th podium place in the World Championship, And I believe it's almost 60 rally wins out of that. You almost had a slip of the tongue there and noting Sebastian Loeb, but it's definitely Sebastian Ogier. He's getting up there in terms of those numbers. I don't think he's going to pass Loeb, but geez, his status grows and grows every time he gets into a rally car, I think.
He's an amazing driver, isn't he? I mean, he just continues to come up with results. And he really is, to me, a polarizing sort of personality in the sport, because nobody can doubt his brilliance and the fact that he keeps getting results. There are at least two occasions we saw from footage throughout Croatia where he had really lucky escapes, where he was off the road and managed to get back on the road without any loss of time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny, when Seb was the championship leader and dominating for all those years, he was always moaning and whinging about the road position and being first on the road. He was always sweeping the road. In Croatia, he wasn't first on the road. He was back about sixth, I think it was. And he was moaning again, simply because, not that he was first on the road, but he was getting all the gravel swept onto the road from those in front of him. So he never seems to be happy in terms of road conditions, but regardless, he continues to get results.
That's just the way it falls, though, on a tarmac rally. When you're first car on the road, you get that clear road to be able to go and attack from. When the cars pass, they cut the corners and bring out a load of gravel onto the stages. That's in many ways why I think Thierry Neuville was leading the rally up until his mistake, because he had had that clean run all through Friday morning and he didn't put a foot wrong. And really, as soon as he'd gone over the stages, those immediately coming after him had a dirty road to try and drive on.
That's correct. And Thierry was lucky in that sense. And I think particularly too, the fact that it didn't rain. If it had have rained, that he was, I guess, the pioneer on those stages, you never know what to expect. And there was certainly lots of heavy rain predicted in the lead up to the event. So that really did work into Thierry's favour. And I really felt sorry for him on the last day, because it was a very, very small error that cost him big time. But fortunately for him, he's still leading the championship with the same points margin to Elvin Evans as what he had going into the event.
I think he's got to be quite disappointed, though, that he missed out on a huge haul of points here. He was leading the rally on Sunday, like we say, and it's the last chance for him to make advantage of that road position. The next seven rounds of the World Rally Championship are on gravel. Seven rounds is a long time to be on gravel, and he's going to be the one sweeping the road clear for at least the first couple, you would imagine, given his championship lead. Maybe it was his last chance to really go from a good road position to extend that advantage. And as we're finding out with this new point system, the gap between first and fourth and first and third in terms of championship points on an event is so minimal. So if you're going to try and make a difference in the title race, you've got to really win and win well.
You sure do, yeah. And look, full credit to Thierry. He's gone out for the first four rallies this year and he's clearly been the pace setter, and he's clearly been faster than Ott Tanak, his perhaps more established teammate, given that he's already won a world championship. I think he's been the driver of the series so far. Elvin Evans in the Toyota, we know how good that Toyota is, and I think Elvin continues to be there or thereabouts in terms of obviously winning a championship this year if all goes to plan, but he never seems to have that out-and-out brilliant speed consistently that an Ogier or a Neuville or a Tanak at times has. Mm-hmm. And I think if Evans wins the title this year, it'll be 100% through consistency rather than being the fastest driver.
I tend to agree. A free article that we've got on our website this week is written by guest columnist Luke Barry. He's put together some thoughts about the Croatia rally and what he learned from the rally and what he took out of it, because there was so much to talk about. He mentioned a whole heap of things about the World Rally Championship, the top flight, the WRC2 category, and the juniors, which is a good segue, Peter, into Taylor Gill's performance, who finished second in the juniors behind Romit Jurgensen. The two FIA Rally Star guys, they did a great job, and for Taylor to finish on the podium on what was only his third tarmac rally was a very good performance.
It was amazing, yeah. And for Romit and Taylor, obviously we're going to sing Taylor's praises more here, given that he's an Aussie. But, yeah, those guys have shown that that FIA Rally Star program is such an important thing. And it's still undecided whether they're going to actually hold it again. I think it's cost them quite a bit more money for this program than what they were initially expecting. But it's proving that it is finding talent, which perhaps wouldn't have been unearthed other than through this program.
I totally agree. We had Romit Jurgensen on this podcast last year at some stage, and he was talking about how he didn't have the budget at all to compete in rallying, let alone in the World Rally Championship. And Taylor Gill would never be over in Europe at the moment had it not be for the FIA Rally Star program. Those two guys are the flagship drivers for that program, and I think as the season progresses, they'll be the two leaders in the Junior World Rally Championship unless somebody comes out of the woodwork. Do you think Taylor has the chance to win the title and come back and chase the 20 or 30 point deficit that he has at the moment to Jurgensen?
On sheer speed, I don't think so, Luke. And that's nothing against Taylor. I think that's simply an experience and a knowledge of these events situation. When you look at Romit Jurgensen, this was the third time that he contested the Croatian rally. The last 3 years he's done it. This was Taylor's third tarmac rally total. For him to be within, I think we worked out half a second, a kilometre close to Romit's pace is quite astronomical, I believe, in such the early part of his career. He's still only 20 years old, and I think it bodes incredibly well for the future for Taylor. But I think this year, and he probably knows more than anybody, that he's just got to get through this year, continue to get some good results and build on his experience. And, yeah, if others fall over and he can manage to win the championship, well, so much the better, obviously.
Taylor's this week's guest on the podcast. The second place in the Junior World Rally Championship is probably deserving of a place and an interview on this podcast. So stick around for that one, and we'll chat to Taylor in depth about the weekend and what plans he has for the remainder of the year. We know that he's chasing funding desperately to try and get some more experience on European rallies and in a Rally 3 car to be able to make the most of his opportunity that he's got this year, to try and chase Romit Jurgensen and try and chase the other people that are the pace setters of the Junior World Rally Championship. So stick around for that. I look forward to chatting to Taylor later this evening, and we'll have that on the podcast for you straight after our chat. Recently in the world of the WRC, it was almost straight after the Croatia Rally had finished, news came out about Martin Sesc's taking part in the World Rally Championship with a Ford Puma Rally 1. Poland and Latvia will be his two events, although it's a unique program in the way that he'll be driving a non-hybrid Rally 1 car in Poland before upgrading to the fully spec model in Latvia. You talked about it on the podcast way back last year, I think it was, Peter, when we talked about this Latvian round becoming a part of the championship, and you said, surely Sess has got to get a drive. And he's won both the last two events that Rally Latvia has been a part of the European Rally Championship, so it's a perfect step for him to make his top-level debut in the WRC.
It sure is. And, yeah, look, I mean, Martins Sesks, and that's Martins with an S on the end. It's always quite difficult to say, I find Martins. He's been clearly the guy to watch on those really high-speed European Championship events. And yeah, you'd expect he'll take to those events and certainly to the Rally 1 car like a duck to water. As you mentioned, he's running the non-hybrid car in Poland, which is the first event of his program, and there's quite a bit of support there from what we understand from the WRC promoter, which I guess says a fair bit about where the championship is going next year, Luke.
Yeah, do you think it's the right thing to do for a promoter to step in and partly fund a drive like this? The promoter got so many things on their plate. They've got to try and get the regulations right, although in many ways it's out of their hands at the moment. Do you think they should be in there funding people and picking and choosing perhaps who gets those good drives?
Perhaps not, but is it an underhanded ploy to make sure that M Sport Ford continues to be in the championship for years to come? I mean, clearly they're not, they don't have the manufacturer backing that a Toyota or a Hyundai does. And without that support and without that ongoing finance coming in through other drivers, maybe that won't be continuing in the future. So, yeah, it's probably not the ideal thing for the promoter to be getting their hands dirty in that sense, but I think it's a great thing for the sport and for the championship regardless.
Yeah, it's a great thing to see a young driver like that. Martins is 23 years old. He's still quite green being 23. We know a lot of these young drivers at the top level of the sport, Robin Pehr is one, Oliver Solberg's another, who are still very, very young, but they do have loads of experience. Sesks is like that as well. And the graduation from a non-hybrid Rally 1 car to a hybrid Rally 1 car, how much difference is it going to make? I really don't know, but at least he gets comfortable in the car without the pressure of having to drive on his home rally. You think about people who've done one-off drives in a World Rally car. By the end of it, they say, gee, I want to do that again straight away because that would be so much faster. Sesc gets that opportunity and he gets that extra little push of the hybrid power.
He does, and as you say, Luke, it will be interesting to see how he goes. And, yeah, you'd expect that he's going to be fast, no doubt about that, on his home rally. Would he be capable of finishing on a podium on the top five? Yeah, maybe not, because there's a lot of great drivers out there who've got lots of experience in those cars. And we're already seeing this year how difficult Andreas Mikkelsen is finding it getting back into a Rally 1 car. He's quite off the pace in that Hyundai. And I think Sesc will have a similar issue as well. But we don't know, I guess, what the future holds for him. Is there another team who's going to come forward next year and maybe run him in the WRC in a non-hybrid Rally 1 car? Is there a pro drive or another team out there that might come in, a Talksport, for example, and run him in the WRC in a non-hybrid Rally 1 car?
Yeah, it's an interesting proposal, particularly with the way that the regulations might be forming in terms of a Rally 2 Plus car. Does this open the door for a Rally 2 Plus drive next year? We don't know whether Latvia will be involved in the WRC next year when it comes to 2025. I would think it's unlikely given the way that they've sort of given that event a singular year contract. Well, yeah, I hope he does really, really well, but it almost is a good tester for the home hero and the way that the sport is at the moment. Back in the 1990s, in the 2000s, you could have a home hero who would turn up to their national round or their home round of the World Rally Championship and be on the pace. I think times have changed with the way that the sport has moved. The attention to detail is so much greater when it comes to reconnaissance and the way that they study recce videos and stage videos of the sport. And the gap is so big, like we say, from Rally 2 to Rally 1, that I don't think anybody, even if they know the event really well, can jump up.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And we will see that with Sesc in Poland and Latvia, I'm sure. And probably the perfect example of that is when Rally New Zealand ran in 2022, and there was lots and lots of talk about Hayden Padden getting a Rally 1 Hyundai for that event, and that didn't happen, obviously, in the end. Hayden ran a Rally 2 car, and I remember him saying at the time or afterwards that he really didn't think that he could be competitive in terms of finishing in a top three position on that event simply because he hadn't had the time in the car. And without that continual testing and continuing stage time on events, it's really difficult to come. You might be able to do it for one or two stages, but to do it consistently over a full three-day event is nigh on impossible.
The level of the top end of the sport is so, so high at the minute that even if you want to try and do it for one stage, it's difficult, let alone try and do it over the course of a whole rally and a whole championship. That's why these drivers at the top are so revered and so talented.
That is, yeah. And I think we need to give a lot of credit in some of those things to M Sport Ford. And we've only got to see this year with the Young Driver Program with what Adrian Formeau was doing this year. I mean, okay, he had a bit of an incident on the last day in Croatia where he broke the steering, but he then went out and won the power stage. And here was a guy that 12 months ago, nobody would have said that he would have been either finishing on the podium or winning power stages. So it's a great testament to what M Sport are doing, and maybe they have plans for Sesc's moving forward. But M Sport have proven over a lot of years that young drivers are where they are focused, and they've had some huge success over the years. And look, I mean, Formeau, we get back to him. I mean, he was matching pace almost with Ort Tanak all event in Croatia. And I repeat that, I mean, it was just an amazing effort. And it just goes to show, but as you say, that you need to have that experience to be able to consistently do those times. And Formeau got that last year in the British Championship and also the WRC category. It was doing events. It was getting those kilometres under his belt so that when he comes back to the top class, he's in that groove and he knows what to expect from it.
The next time we talk about the World Championship, we'll have yet another Aussie on the list. It'll be Lewis Bates and Anthony McLaughlin's turn in the spotlight. A GR Yaris Rally 2. I'm looking forward to following at Rally Portugal at the start of May and then obviously talking to them about it when they come back to Australia and learning all about how they went in that car as they look forward to bringing that one back to Australia. Do you have any thoughts on that, Peter, before we move forward away from the World Rally Championship for now?
Well, I'd just like to say that my predictions in the WRC this year have been pretty average, so I'd like to go on record as saying that Lewis and Anthony have got absolutely no chance of finishing on the podium in Portugal, and hopefully that will mean that they do. So I know they'll struggle a little because obviously they'll be getting used to a brand-new car and a brand-new event, but what an experience for the pair of them to go over there and drive a brand new car before it heads back to Australia.
Yeah, the great thing about that is they'll drive the car and then the car comes back to Australia. It's always a good thing when the cars eventually end up down under, whether it be the Toyotas or the Subarus back in the late 1990s that came here for Rally Australia and then stayed here, or whether it's the current Rally 2 cars that find their way to Australia. That's the best thing about people going overseas and competing on my side. The Ada River Rally in Victoria, the second round of their state championship at the weekend. The Luff brothers, they won the rally, but they'd swapped seats beforehand. Brad Luff took the win driving in his Subaru with brother Jamie beside him. It's not the first time that Brad's done really well in an event. He competed at the Rally of the Heartland last year in what was, up until last weekend, his best result behind the wheel. And to win a state round as an Australian Rally Championship top-line co-driver, it's reminding me a bit of Ben Searcy in the way that he's won a West Australian state title as a driver and a co-driver, I believe, and he's, yeah, a class act.
He sure is, yeah. And look, as you mentioned, Brad had a great result at the Heartland last year, and he's done quite a lot of events in a six-cylinder Commodore and also a Corolla, of like an old rear-wheel drive Corolla. So he's got some experience behind the wheel. And with Jamie, who's normally driving the GR Yaris AP4 in the co-driver's seat, they outlasted Brendan Reeves in his Datsun 1600, who led the event early. But I'm sure that the discussions in the Luff household moving forward is going to be who's driving the Yaris. Is it going to be Brad or is it going to be Jamie?
That's a great point. I wonder when they have their next test in near Yas or wherever they're wanting to test it. They might swap roles for a run or two. I wonder who owns the car. I wonder who has the right to say yes or no in terms of that.
Well, Brad's the older brother, so let's presume that maybe he's got a few bragging rights there in terms of age. I guess it's probably the family owns the car, so we wait and see. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Brad has already had his time behind the wheel of that Toyota Yaris.
And we'll talk to them, of course, at the Rally of the Heartland. And we might have to ask them that, Peter, when we talk to them, because this weekend is one of the big events of the rallying calendar. Rally of the Heartland, based at Burra. It gives over 400 competitive kilometres over 3 days. It's a real endurance test, and you and I experienced that one for the first time last year. I'm really looking forward to seeing that part of the world again.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world at the southern tip of the Flinders Ranges. And as you mentioned, like 450 kilometres competitive over 3 days in 18 stages, it really is a traditional sort of classic type rally where if you get to the finish, you're going to get a good result. And we saw that last year. I mean, there's 370 plus kilometre stages to be held during the event. And it really will be a battle of attrition in terms of just getting to the finish with your car in a good mechanical condition. And I think looking at the long-term forecast, the weather's going to be dry, if not too warm, but it's certainly going to be dry and dusty again this year.
370 kilometre stages. Wow, that's quite unbelievable. It was a similar case last year. It almost calls for mid-stage refuels in many ways. A lot of the cars these days wouldn't be able to go 70 competitive kilometres on a tank of fuel, would they?
No, well, yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, they probably would, but I mean, certainly last year they ran the 70K stages back-to-back at night, so they virtually came back and had a service and a refuel after the first one, then went back out into the night and did it again. They're only running the one-night stage this year. They had quite a few issues last year with dust. It was very still on the Saturday night, so that will probably alleviate that. But what a great entry for the event. I mean, headed by Nathan Quinn in his Mazda RX2, the car that he's won the Alpine Rally with on two occasions. But for me, it's car number two and car number three that I'm really looking forward to seeing. Mel Keogh and his Audi Quattro, which is always like the highlight of any rally you go to. And then Glenn Brinkman and his Ford Escort RS Cosworth, who led last year until some mechanical issues. So some real classic WRC type machinery on offer.
It was a fair old entry list last year, but then you've gone and added those two, Nathan Quinn and Mel Keogh in those cars. It just adds to the depth of the entry list. And we haven't even talked about the winner of the rally last year in Tom Dermody, who's got an even faster Escort that he'll be competing with at the weekend.
Yeah, Tom, he's running a 2.5-litre Escort this year. So a brand new car from what he ran last year. And we know how quick he was in 2023 at the Rally of the Heartland. He'll certainly be a man to watch. I mean, the local guy, Tyler, driving a Mitsubishi Magna, which is a pretty understated rally car, as we know. But again, we've seen guys like Tristan Carrigan lead the Alpine Rally in a similar vehicle. So he'll be quick on those fast South Australian roads, as will the former winner, Stuart Bowes, who'll be back in that beautiful Mercedes-Benz of his.
For those who haven't been to the Rally of the Heartland, Peter, can you describe the stages very briefly to those who might be listening? They're very fast. They're typical South Australian, but in some ways the Rally of the Heartland roads are even faster than what you might see normally.
Yeah, very fast, as you say, Luke, and it's more open country than what you would perhaps see in the old Rally of South Australia stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Around the High Eden stage and stuff that the Barossa Rally has run in the last couple of years. So it's more open field sort of stuff, fast flowing stuff. There's a lot of big trees, obviously big gum trees heading up towards the Flinders Ranges. So magnificent scenery for photography and for video, and an event that, even though it does have a high top speed, the competitors generally love it because of the length of it, the length of the stages, the scenery and the smoothness of the roads that they're running on. It really has become one of the favourites for a lot of competitors throughout each year.
Where do you think this rally moves to in the future? We know that Ivor Sinalis has had a long, long career directing a number of high-class rallies. He's not getting any younger, as I'm sure he would admit himself. Do you think there's some plans to move this to even bigger heights and a greater challenge? I know 450 competitive kilometres over 3 days is a big challenge as it is, but do you see the event moving forward and having an even bigger adventure attached to it?
It's always a tough conversation to have, isn't it? When you've got a successful platform for an event, do you tinker with it and try and make it better or longer or whatever you might want to do, or do you stick with what you've got? And I know there's been quite a bit of discussion over recent times about the Otago Rally in New Zealand, and a lot of people have said, yeah, Chris Meek reckons it's the best rally in the world. Let's make it a WRC. Well, yeah, that would be fantastic. But when you do something like that, it takes away the fabric of the event and what's made it what it is. And I think could be said for the Rally of the Heartland, if you do try and do something different to it, does that take away the aura of the event and what's made it what it is today?
All of the action will be available from the Rally of the Heartland social media pages, and I look forward to heading over there and experiencing it with everybody as we did last year. It's laid back, it's low key, it's a really good event to go and enjoy whether you're there as a media person or as a competitor. So I look forward to seeing how those top few competitors go in the Rally of the Heartland and seeing where they all stack up on the stage times. Lastly, though, before we leave you for yet another week, the Tasmanian Rally Championship does kick off over the weekend. The two Skoda Fabia Rally 2 Evos of the Maguire boys will be driving there. What is the event, Peter? What's the format of it? And what can we expect, maybe not necessarily of those two Skodas, but of the guys who are a little bit behind them on the list?
Yeah, it's the Rocky Cape Helier Rally. And traditionally in Tasmania in recent years, their state rounds have been recce in the morning and the rally in the afternoon, which is a really compact, easy, user-friendly type format, I guess. It's pretty much home territory for those Maguire boys, so they'll be fast. But we also see the return of Bodie Reading, who's got his rebuilt Subaru Impreza out for the first time, I believe. So it'll be great to see how Bodie goes. Aidan Peterson, another Subaru driver who we had on the podcast last week, he'll be out there in his Subaru. And our own Matt Whitten is co-driving for veteran Lee Peterson in the Nissan Pulsar GDI, or Nissan Sunny, as they like to be called. So it does promise to be a great event, and the Tassie rallying community is really healthy at the minute, so it's great to see it going well.
It is. Those Maguire boys are getting some good kilometres under their belt on familiar roads that might just form part of the Australian Rally Championship at the end of the year. Who knows? Peter, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to talking to you next week.
No worries, Luke. Look forward to it.
From Finland, we welcome Taylor Gill to the podcast. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Croatia Rally podium in the Junior World Rally Championship. It must be pretty cool. Can you sum up the weekend in a few words? Maybe dream come true or something like that might fit the bill?
Probably not what I was expecting is probably the most fitting way. Yeah, like I think it was sort of pretty well documented before the event that I'd said if we could finish in the top five, that'd be a great result. So, yeah, second certainly exceeded our own expectations.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about the Croatia Rally. We watch it on the WRC videos, the all live stuff. You and Dan Brick were there as spectators 12 months ago. From spectating to driving in the event, what was it like to compete in? I understand it's quite a tough event.
It's it's pretty gnarly. Yeah, to be honest, it's nothing. It's nothing like anything I've seen before. Like probably maybe the closest comparison I could put it to something in Australia would be picture the Rally of Canberra, but make it tarmac and make the grip change on literally every second corner. That's almost what it's like, I would say. It's it's unbelievable. Like we did two tarmac rallies last year. The first one we did in Austria, I would say, was nothing like anything we had in Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second rally we did in Slovenia, neighboring country, the technicality of the roads, like the twistiness of the roads, was quite similar. But in Slovenia, it was missing the big crests, you know, the huge dips, the big cuts, and obviously at only a national level rally, the guys aren't as, let's say, ballsy as the WRC boys on where they put their wheels.
What's Zagreb like as a place? It's got itself a home in the World Rally Championship in some ways. It's only been there for a few years, but when you think about what's happened on that event over the past few years, I saw somebody noted as a modern day classic or something like that. Is the town really good for the WRC, and does it welcome it like you would expect it to?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's there was lots of spectators around. Obviously, I think more than what we saw in Sweden, which is fair enough when the weather's a little bit nicer. It's a bit easier to spectate. So yeah, from that side, yeah, it was really nice. Zagreb as a city is a nice enough place, but the roads, like the transports, are really busy. Lots of cars, and it was quite a difficult rally to transport around. They don't know how to build a very efficient road system in Croatia. So yeah. That was a challenge, but it's a very nice place to visit. Nice country.
From what I've learned about you over the past few years, you'd probably be able to answer this question, I think, because you're pretty astute with your rally knowledge. Now that you're a podium place getter in the JWRC, can you name the other two Aussies who've done a similar thing and finished on the podium in the Junior World Rally Championship?
I know Brendo is one, and Molly must be the other, I suppose.
Correct, yeah. So Brendan Reeves has got four podiums, Molly Taylor's got one podium, and yourself now a podium place getter. Elsewhere in this part of the world, Dave Holder got a podium in the JWRC when he was doing it about 6 or 7 years ago now. It's a pretty impressive feat, and I hope not only us as a rally publication, but also general motorsport media take advantage of this, because it's a good feat for somebody has a future in the sport, because not often does it happen, let alone in rallying.
Yeah, especially on tarmac, to be honest.
Tarmac's a completely different thing.
Yeah, if I looked at the championship, or I should say when I look at the championship on paper, the rallies we do at the start of the year, I would say on paper, Croatia should have been our weakest event. So yeah, now I guess it's funny how your expectations reset, because even before going into Rally Sweden, we had more or less the goal put on us was to finish, was that we could finish eighth in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we almost win the first stage, that expectation rockets up really quickly. And then in the end, we actually finished eighth after the punctures and everything. and then, yeah, we come to Croatia. Again, sort of expecting or hoping for a top five, and then you finish second, and there's only one place above that. So I suppose that has to be our next target.
That's right. Let's get to some of the specifics of the event. You started slowly on Friday. The stages maybe caught you a little bit by surprise in terms of their technicality. Of course, you drive them as in reconnaissance and whatnot, but you mentioned when you finished that first stage, you were quite surprised at actually how difficult they were, not only from the road conditions, but also the cutting and the delicate element of trying to make that work.
It was super, super difficult, to be honest. I probably started, I wanted to start carefully. That was the plan, I suppose, from the word go. I was probably maybe a little bit surprised with how far off the pace I was. I knew that I was probably on maybe the sub-optimal tire combination. I think it wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as it could have been anyway. So that probably didn't help in trying to get the confidence from the word go. But yeah, the first stage was the longest stage of the rally. So they really smack you on the head from the start. And I quite enjoyed the road, like when I did the recce, and I knew a bit the first half of the stage because it was used as a stage last year. Mm-hmm. But the last part of the stage, the whole road had been resurfaced, and there was the potential for really big cuts. And we kind of had these nightmare conditions, almost the worst you could get for a tarmac event, where it rained in the week leading up to the rally, but then stopped. So the road, the tarmac was dry, but everything else was wet. And as soon as the top guys take a cut, then the mud is on the road. And by the time I get there, 40 cars later, some corners are just full mud, no line, no nothing. And you literally have to slow right down to second gear almost, and yeah, just tiptoe over it. So yeah, to be honest, when I got to the end of the first stage, I knew that my driving was really poor. My commitment was really poor. I spun in the stage. So yeah, I think we were 50 seconds off the eventual guy who set the fastest time. But yeah, when I got to the end of the first stage, I was just thinking, this is going to be such a long weekend. Like, I almost had more fun spectating the stage last year than driving it. So yeah, thankfully it only got better from there.
Were you surprised then at where your pace got to? You've won a few stages. Learning on the run is a difficult thing, even on tarmac, or particularly on tarmac. Were you surprised at how quickly you learned to be able to get up to the pace of those who were at the front?
Yes and no. I think I always believed that on a nice bit of road that was unpolluted, I suppose, that my driving technique was good enough to set quite okay times. But yeah, it was probably a little bit of a surprise. I think, yeah, even I probably had to reset my own expectations of where our pace was after the first loop. And then, yeah, I don't really know what clicked or what changed. We obviously put different tyres on the car for the afternoon loop, which, yeah, must have helped in one way or another. But to be honest, nothing really changed drastically. I just went out and just really tried to focus on the process of driving the car, just brake, turn, get in and get out and get to the next corner, brake, turn and get to the next corner. Yeah, really just tried to focus on that. And yeah, so then we were equal fastest on the first stage in the afternoon, which I guess was a surprise in one sense, but then it wasn't in another regard, I suppose. And then and then we won the stage after that. So yeah, again, then the expectations reset to, okay, we have the potential to win stages, so let's keep going with it.
As the weekend goes on through Saturday and through Sunday, at the top of the field, it was quite, what's the word? Boring is almost a way to describe it when you were following it as a fan. But when Sunday came around, it all of a sudden got turned on its head. That first stage, or the second stage of the morning loop that would end up as the power stage, I believe, was very, very troublesome for the top crews. What was it like for you as a JWRC runner with a polluted road, with less experience than those at the front? What was that stage like? I think you had quite an interesting stage end comment after that one as well.
Oh, it was absolutely awful. I could probably say it's the worst. Like, as far as the road condition and the difficultness of the stage, it's maybe the worst and hardest stage that I've ever had to drive. It was my plan was always to, on the Sunday, was to push on stage 17 and 19 because I really liked the stage. I was quite comfortable on it. Mm-hmm. And then take it easy on 18 and 20, unless I had to push for some reason. Thankfully, I didn't. But yeah, that was always the plan. I knew the stage was going to be difficult. The recce for the stage was extremely difficult. And then once we started getting fed information, Neville's off and Evans has spun and Formeau hit a block and, you know, this and that and this and, you know, he's hit a bridge and all this sort of thing, then I was really like, okay, we might just really kick it back a gear here. So yeah, if anyone looks at the times for those two stages, we were really, really slow. But at the end of the day, we could get away with that. On the first pass of the stage, I had a bit of a moment, like maybe only 1K into the stage, where I hit some mud and sort of slid up onto the bank. on the outside. And that was the moment where I was really like, okay, no, this is ridiculous. We just have to get through. So
yeah,
it was a huge, huge challenge.
That stage as well is a tough one for co-drivers. Martin Vidager, who's Thierry Neuville's co-driver, made the mistake that unfortunately cost them a lot of time. What was it like for Dan in the co-driver's seat? As well as it's a big learning experience for you, it's a huge learning experience for him. As a co-driver, how hard is it on those roads to be able to, you know, keep in time, keep in rhythm, and make sure that they're delivered on time and perfect?
Yes, super difficult. It's got to be one of the toughest rallies in the world on a co-driver. It's funny because we talk about how difficult it was, not only for Dan but for all the co-drivers in the junior category, and where in a rally three car, you know, imagine being in a rally two and then a rally one. So yeah, it's really difficult but from both sides, because especially on the recce, it's really easy to drive at like 10 kilometers an hour and jam in all the information you want and you feel you need in the notes, but it's not possible. You can't do it that way. So yeah, it's really difficult. A lot of the stages have no real consistent rhythm. You might start on a road that's, you know, wide enough to park three trucks across, but then finish on a road that's barely wide enough for the car and it's covered in mud. And it's really difficult for the co-drivers to adjust to that. So, yeah, from Dan's side of the car and all the co-drivers, it's a huge, huge challenge and, yeah, a big learning experience for him, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure he did a superb job on the notes, as always. From three rallies on tarmac, tell me a bit about how you drive on a sealed surface. It's a completely different approach to gravel rallying. There's lots of things that come into it that are different than a gravel rally. We mentioned the pollution on the road. We mentioned some punctures. As you went across the weekend, how did you find yourself dealing with that pollution? Were you just going through it at a snail's pace? Were you taking risks through it? I doubt you would have been, but do you learn on the fly and think your pace improves on those types of roads?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing I struggled with on the first morning was that I would come up to a corner that might have been full of mud or full of gravel, and then the next one might be, again, full of gravel but might have like a small line going around it. And I couldn't correlate what I was seeing on the road in front of me to what was about to happen to the car.
Yeah.
So I would just slow right down. That's the safest option. That was where I was missing the confidence on the Friday morning. But once I got an understanding of what was happening, what I saw on the road and what that meant, and the second pass, you obviously remember where the worst corners were, I suppose. Then that gave me the extra confidence to know that if I can see the line, still a line on the road, then I know I have to take the cut, but I can still carry quite good speed. But if there's no line at all, then you have to slow down. And especially, obviously, everyone knows you kind of have to follow the cuts. Otherwise, you're going wide. And it is true. Like, I had a few small moments where I maybe didn't go deep enough into the cut. And then on the exit of the corner, I'm, you know, right up next to the gutter. So yeah, from that side, it's really difficult. But the driving on tarmac is just so, like, technically inclined, I would say. There's so many little things. It's so easy to just bleed time everywhere. On gravel, maybe it's, for sure, the driving is still a precise art, I suppose, but you can maybe get away with being a little bit more just ballsy, just throw the car in and go and, you know, really commit. Whereas on tarmac, it's I would say a little bit more technical. On the Friday afternoon and Saturday morning, when we started to show good pace, my driving was a bit aggressive, maybe. Like, I was a little bit on what felt like on the limit, having moments, and it was a bit of a maybe unsafe sort of speed compared to on the Saturday afternoon. And even Sunday, we set some okay stage times, some good split times. I had a bit of a spin and this sort of thing, but my driving was much more just point and squirt, I suppose. But yeah, it felt safer, even though the speed was the same. So yeah, I think that was me probably just relaxing into the roads and the rhythm and everything like that. But it's certainly a fine art.
Yeah, for sure. And when you talk about cutting corners on the rally road, of course, punctures become a problem. You had one on the weekend. It's hard because you're coming on and off the road. Sometimes the road is quite harsh when you come back on with the low profile tarmac tyres that you've got on. What did you learn about that over the weekend, and where to cut, how to cut without getting punctures, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Obviously, you on the first recce day, because the way they do the recce for the WRC is they'll send basically group one, all the top guys to one group of stages, and then they send basically everyone else to the other group of stages. So, yeah, when you're one of the first cars to go through on the recce, you don't have so many lines to follow. But on day two of the recce, when all the P1 drivers have been through, then you can see where they've been putting the cars and where they're cutting, and it gives you a bit more of an idea. So, yeah, it's sort of one of those things that I could look at a cut and go, I don't know about that. But if you doubt it, that will go in there. So you just have to follow it, and you really have to drive with your eyes as well. Like on the pace note side, I had some corners where I would put a late apex, which if there was no gravel on the road would be the good line. But when you get there, everyone's turned in early and cut the corner and pulled the mud onto the road. So you have to follow that. If I went in with my late line, then I'd be off in the bushes on the outside. So yeah, it's really difficult. Like you said, the punctures play a big part. We got one on the third stage, quite close to the end, actually. I think five or six juniors all got punctures from this one cut. There was a rock or something in the cut. I have to look back the footage and see exactly what it was. But it was a bit annoying because we got that. And then on the Saturday, we have one tire that had a slow leak, which we noticed between two of the stages. So it meant we had to put some wet tires on for a dry stage, which was a bit interesting. Yeah, I think we have one other tire issue, but actually all the issues with the tires were caused by the rims bending, not by the tires breaking, I suppose. So yeah, it's really difficult. Some stages, like the last stage on Friday, we pushed quite hard, I would say, and had some really big hits, and the bottom of the car, like literally just smashing the ground. And it feels really bad. And you almost like, all right, we got to the end, and I remember Dan saying to me, how we didn't get a puncture in there, I will never know. So yeah, it's a bit of a gamble like that.
With tyres, lastly, before we move on to the future and what the rest of the championship might hold, managing the tyres, you've got a compound choice as to what you go with. When you're on a long stage, how are you managing those tyres on tarmac? You're clearly trying to keep them at the optimal temperature, but were you able to think you managed those effectively?
Yeah, more or less. It's very difficult because we only got given 10 soft tyres to use, and we had 18 hards. So from a Pirelli standpoint, the hard was the optimal tyre, but because the weather turned out to be so cold, really, you could have run the whole rally on soft tyres, and it would have been the correct choice for the juniors anyway, because their tyres are a bit different to the top guys. So yeah, it was really difficult to manage those. So you had to cross some hard tyres in there at some point to make the softs last. Unfortunately, a couple of these tyre issues we had took some soft tyres out of our equation. But in the end, it wasn't so bad. Our tyre wear was maybe a bit higher than a few of the other guys, but we didn't run out, which was good, I suppose. I think maybe only one stage. The first stage on Saturday morning, I was a bit annoyed actually because it was like a 15K stage, but the last 6 or 7Ks were really steep downhill. So I knew I had to manage the brakes and the tyres on the way up the hill to be able to kind of use it on the way down. And I didn't do a very good job of that on the first stage. I was a little bit annoyed with myself there. So yeah, I sort of cooked the tyres a bit coming down the hill. But on the second loop, it was much better. But yeah, it's just trying to be like really smooth and not throwing the car around and really loading the tyres. Because although, you run this low profile tarmac racing slick tyre, the tyre still moves a lot because the sidewall has to be, I guess, big enough to take the impacts of rallying. So yeah, when they get hot, they do sort of lose their stability. But yeah, it's definitely a big game trying to manage that.
There's lots of things to think about, as always, in the sport that we love. I've got to ask about Romet, and where his speed's at compared to yours. Do you think that you can catch him and be faster than him? You've got gravel coming up for the rest of the championship. So do you think you can chase him for the junior WRC title? Because on paper and based on the results that we've had so far, he's the favourite.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you say, he is the favourite. He's got a big points lead at the moment, but yeah, it's still quite open. That's, yeah, not to say that we can't catch him and take some points away from him for the rest of the year. Obviously, yeah, he had a good run in Sweden, and he had a really superb drive in Croatia. So yeah, I really tipped the hat off to him. He yeah, did a really good job. But I think now we come on to three gravel rallies. Like, I would say the first two events in Sweden and Croatia, especially Sweden, is a specialist sort of rally, I would say. Yeah. Croatia, okay, tarmac is a bit more common, but still more of a specialist event. Now we come on to three gravel rallies, which are obviously all different in their own right, but they're still maybe a little bit more generic. And obviously, a rally like Sardinia, which is so rough, can be a big game of luck as well. So, yeah, look, we'll have to see. I think last year, yeah, we showed in spurts that we can certainly match up with him on gravel. We just have to be able to put a whole event together and yeah, try and unlock that.
And, of course, your teammates in the FIA Rally Star program, your good mates from what I can gather as well. It's great to fight with those guys for the higher places in the JWRC and to learn from one another as well as part of the team that you've been in for the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, it's really, really good, Roman. I get along really well. So yeah, I was very happy to see him stand on the top step after the performance he did. But yeah, I think it's fair to say we were both pretty excited when we worked out that we were sitting first and second, and yeah, really just had to bring it home there. So yeah, like you say, to have two Rally Star cars, 1-2, was a huge feat for the program, for us as drivers. There's obviously a lot of people getting around that are, you know, try to, I guess, pull away from the program and, you know, try to shoot the program down and call it a money pit or whatever you want, sort of thing. But to see us finish 1-2 and really shut everyone up that we are here because we deserve it. We are here because we've got the speed. We work hard for it. So yeah, it makes us super proud, you know, to see a tear in the eye of the boss of the program is pretty cool at the end of the rally.
An amazing experience. What a lot of people might not realize as well is that there's clearly three rounds of the junior championship yet to run. The last round at Greece is double points, and you also get to drop your worst round. You might have done two rallies and you might have done three rallies, but the championship is still totally up for grabs, whether you're 30 points behind, 50 points behind. Gee, there might even be someone who hasn't competed in the JWRC yet that comes and wins all three rounds to go. It's an approach that's difficult, but you just got to keep putting good results on top of good results, and you never know what might happen at the end of the season.
Yeah, it is difficult. Like you say, obviously we can drop around. So for the moment, Sweden's obviously our worst rally. Obviously, if Romet stays consistent like he does, then maybe his worst event could be a second or a third place. So, yeah, it's always difficult. But like you say, the last round being double points helps quite a lot. Obviously, the stage win points can be quite crucial as well. It was nice to get a few of those on the weekend, although I feel like we definitely missed some opportunity to get a couple more. So, yeah, obviously, in a game that every point's crucial, then yeah, we want to maximize those. So that was a little bit disappointing, but yeah, I think coming out to three gravel rallies now, it should be. I'm hoping we can end the season strongly. But of course, like I said a second ago, because of the result in Sweden, we almost have now. We've kind of used our chance to have a poor result. So yeah, it's trying to find the balance of speed and consistency to the end of the year.
Between now and WRC Rally Sardinia, do you have any planned tests? Do you have anything in Finland that's lined up to have an extra bit of seat time behind the wheel of a Rally 3 car? I'm sure there'll be a Rally Start test at some stage in there.
Yeah, we do a test for the rally on the Monday in Sardinia. So that's the only seat time planned at the moment. We have to think and look a little bit what we can do before the rally. And obviously before Rally Finland, it's perhaps a bit easier to prepare for living in Finland. But Sardinia is a tricky one because the event's so, rough and unique that to do any sort of driving that would be relevant to that, you really have to be down in that sort of area. So, yeah, it's tricky on that side of things, but it's also this different format event means there's only 12 stages in the rally. So it, from a pre-event preparation point of view, I suppose there's less stages, so we can put a bit more focus onto every stage as opposed to a rally where there might be 20 stages. You're trying to spread the workload across that.
Taylor, thanks so much for your time. And I appreciate you going in depth about the rally weekend and some of the things you've learned over the past few months, given it's all gone up another level into the Junior World Rally Championship this year. I appreciate your time again. Thanks so much, and we'll keep cheering from the sidelines and hope the good results continue on.
Great. Thanks, Luke. Thanks very much.
Hey, it's Mozzie here. I don't have much experience when it comes to rallying, but Waukesha Racing Services does, and they're available now for your rally needs. They can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication. No job is too big or too small. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. And you don't need to be an Aussie champion or factory back to be able to. From club to state to national level competitors and car owners, let Waukesha Racing Services help you with your rally needs. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@waukeshawracing.com.au.